Chapter 24. The electric Jeep had looked more like an overbuilt go-kart to Hicks. He thought the roll bars were especially absurd. Why put them on a vehicle that probably had a top speed of 65 kilometers per hour? Then Walker had gotten behind the wheel. Now Hicks had one arm wrapped tightly around a roll bar so he wouldn't go flying out of the elevated seat behind Walker whenever he made a high-speed turn. The pulse rifle slung around his chest was an M41. He would have preferred the M56 smart gun, but it was too bulky for the Jeep, and Jackson had insisted a flamethrower was out of the question in a construction area. Well, he could improvise weapons from whatever was lying around. He'd done it before, and they could put it on his tab with the illegal alien clones he'd destroyed. Ripley, back on LV-426, laughing. "They can bill me!" Hicks suspected they had. He blinked to wake the lens over his left eye. The feed from Ops showed Jackson, Rossetti, and Bishop gathered around a console, with Spence peering over Jackson's shoulder, her brown face ashen and pinched with worry.
"Someone give me a read, will you?" he said into the mic.
"You're getting close. 20 feet, hang a left," Jackson replied. Hicks glanced at Walker, who made the okay sign with one hand to show he'd heard. Walker had sound only, saying he couldn't watch TV and drive. They'd probably be okay as long as Jackson didn't announce any turns at the last second, Hicks thought, almost losing his grip on the roll bar as Walker swung the Jeep left.
"Is Tully moving?" Hicks asked.
"No, not for a couple of minutes," Jackson replied. This tunnel was a lot narrower than the one they'd just come out of. If Walker lost control, they'd get wedged between the walls instead of rolling over. Abruptly, the Jeep bounced out of the tunnel and into the cavernous construction area. Was this near where he'd met Spence? He couldn't tell. All construction areas were remarkably alike, especially in the dark. Walker let up on the accelerator.
"Is he here? Is he moving?"
he asked.
10 o'clock, said Rossetti.
Walker stamped on the accelerator again and then had to veer around a stack of bulkhead connectors, narrowly missing several dozen barrels stacked up in a complex arrangement. Plenty of room here to roll the Jeep. Maybe into a 15-foot pile of unpainted metal plating.
"Are you sure that's Tully?"
Spence asked, her voice high and tight. Hicks blinked to wake the lens again. She and Bishop had switched places.
"Of course I'm sure," Jackson snapped.
She pushed Spence back from the console, making her and Bishop switch back.
"That's his locator frequency. Can't be anyone else. Or didn't they tell you how implants work?"
"It's just that he's still not moving," Spence said unhappily. Jackson rolled her eyes.
"I don't understand why he'd go there, of all places," Rossetti said.
"No mystery, really,"
Bishop said, sounding oddly apologetic.
"When he saw his badge and realized Deacon Tam hadn't worked, he got as far away from everyone else as possible. That area is all bulkhead, nothing on the other side but vacuum. If we can't get him into an airlock, blowing a hole in the bulkhead won't threaten the entire state."
He saw Spence's stricken expression and cut off.
"He's very brave," Bishop went on after a moment, "and honorable, to think of other lives."
"He's scared."
Spence's bleak voice had an undertone of anger.
"Scared and alone."
"You're getting real close, Hicks," Jackson said, talking over her. "You should see him soon, if you don't already."
"It's a goddamn obstacle course here," Hicks said. "All this construction crap doesn't show up for you, does it?"
He gave Walker a soft nudge with the toe of his boot.
"Put on screen."
Walker slapped the dashboard and a screen lit up, showing a basic grid, white lines on black and two dots, one large stationary red one and a smaller green one moving along a circuitous route.
"Okay, but I told you I don't like to watch TV and drive." "I'll watch. You just don't hit anything," Hicks said.
"Do you see him yet?" asked Jackson, just as Spence said, "You're practically on top of him."
The screen said Spence was right.
"Stop,"
Hicks ordered. Walker stood on the brakes, and Hicks barely managed not to fly over his head into another large collection of barrels. He turned on the torch clipped to his rifle and climbed out of the Jeep, looking for anything that could be human. All he saw here were barrels and more barrels. Some were stacked 3, even 4 high, but most of them were gathered into groups of half a dozen. As Hicks moved around them, he saw several more lying open on their sides, the lids scattered like forgotten frisbees.
"Tully," he called. "Tully, yo!"
A short distance away, something about 6 meters tall and covered with a tarp loomed over him. Hicks raised his rifle and swept the torch beam over it. Nothing. He turned away and caught a flash from something on the deck. Keeping the light on it, he inched forward and saw it was sitting in the middle of a pool of thick, dark sludge. At first, he thought it had spilled out of the overturned barrels, but his torch showed that the overturned barrels were dry. As he got closer, he saw lumps of various sizes in it, maybe tools or other things left behind by the construction workers. The morning shift wouldn't be too happy when they saw this. The shop steward would call management to remind them unidentified sludge wasn't part of the deal. Hicks wished he could have said the same. Where the hell had this shit come from? The answer came to him unbidden. The aliens. Of course. If it was weird, completely unfamiliar, and appeared without warning or explanation, the aliens were behind it, which meant you could assume it was also lethal. Except, he'd never seen sludge before. Or had he? Maybe this was a cruder form of what they used to cocoon humans for their chest bursters, or it was an alien version of a tar pit and those lumps in it were only asleep. If so, he didn't want to wake them. As he got closer, however, he saw one of the larger lumps near the edge of the pool was just partially covered and he didn't have to worry about waking it. Flight jackets didn't sleep. Using the end of the rifle, he lifted it out of the pool. One sleeve had been torn off. The sludge on the one remaining didn't completely obscure the company logo badges running from shoulder to wrist. Hicks let it drop and told Walker to roll forward 3 meters with headlights set to maximum. Now he could make out the scattered fragments of bone on the surface as well as a flap of scalp with hair attached. Any sign of him? Jackson's voice in his ear made him jump. He'd practically forgotten about her and the others back in ops.
Yeah, he said. A few.
What's that supposed to mean? Spence demanded. Jackson shushed her.
You gotta be looking straight at him, Walker called from the Jeep. The screen shows you standing right next to him.
The reading says they're in the room.
It's not reading right.
You're not reading it right.
For all of a second, Hicks was back in the laboratory on LV-426 with his greatly reduced squad bracing for the aliens' attack, all of them baffled by the sensor readings until they finally thought to look up, as he did now. Not at a low ceiling in a dimly lit room, but at the top of a shadow 5 meters tall. Movement flickered, a shadow in the bigger shadow. Or was it just his eyes? Then a shape broke free of the larger darkness, hissing as it flew over his head and landed on the Jeep's roll bars. Walker's bellow of surprise became a scream.